All right, today on CyberWork, our deep dive into manufacturing and OT cybersecurity brings us to the problem of endpoint security. My guest, Tom Molden, the CIO of Global Executive Engagement at Tanium, has been grappling with these problems for a while. We talk about his early formative tech experiences pre-Windows operating system, his transformational position, moving from fiscal strategy and implementation into his first time as chief information officer, and we talk about the interlocking problems that come from connected manufacturing devices and the specific benefits and challenges to be found in strategizing around the endpoints, all of the endpoints, not just the computer terminals. All that and some very good career advice for teams and for personal growth today on CyberWork. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the CyberWork with InfoSec podcast. Each week, we talk with a different industry thought leader about cybersecurity trends, the way those trends affect the work of InfoSec professionals, while offering tips for breaking in or moving up the ladder in the cybersecurity industry. My guest today, Tom Molden, is the CIO of Global Executive Engagement at Tanium. Is that Tanium or Tanium? Sorry.
Tanium.
Tanium. He has over 30 years of leadership experience in technology, mainly in manufacturing and high-tech industries. Tom has a deep knowledge of how large enterprises and manufacturing organizations operate. So we've been talking a lot about the manufacturing sector the last couple episodes here and the security involved with it. Tom had some specific insights in our pre-conversations around endpoint security, and we'll cover some of that as well, but we're also just going to get a little bit of Tom's whole cybersecurity journey. So Tom, thank you for joining me today and welcome to CyberWork.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Love to be here.
So Tom, to get our listeners on board with what you, your interests and connection to the field, can you tell us about your early interest in computers and tech and security? Was there an initial spark? Was there a teacher, or did you just get excited on your own and learn it in that way?
Yeah, I'm happy to share. So I got involved with computers in the late 80s. I did not have an education, formal education. There really wasn't much in the way of that.
Right.
I think I had a basic programming course in college at one point. But I joined the car rental industry when I came out of college. I was living in Europe. And at the time, PCs were just starting to kind of come out, and the whole concept of moving off of a mainframe and doing things, you know, somewhat more cheaper and efficiently was kind of fresh. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time. And the company I was working for was making the move to try and start designing car rental software for PCs. And we experimented with a small business unit that I was involved with working in. And it was really kind of a fluke more than anything else that I happened to be the guy that they said, hey, can you go figure out how to deploy all these PCs into these car rental stations? And I did it, and it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot about, you know, computers, and I learned a little bit about software and things like this, operating systems and such. This is pre-Windows, you have to remember. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that really was the spark to your question was when I started to figure out the power of having data, right? So if you can imagine the car rental industry, how important it is to have data at your fingertips about vehicles, about customers and rental and such. I was sitting in my office, you know, downloading data from PCs that was being sent to me on disks in the mail onto a computer and putting them in a database management system and figuring out how to write queries. And I realized very quickly that there's a ton of power here. And there's a lot of questions I can answer and a lot of insights I can derive from this. And I kind of made a little bit of a career for myself in doing so. And that was sort of the spark that started my interest in technology. That was really the power of data.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, you kind of alluded to it with regards to getting, you know, floppy sent to you and making your own system. But like, what was data, you know, how was data used at that point? Like, how does it differ from now? Obviously, now we have, you know, all kinds of fine grained ways of analyzing it and stuff. But what were people looking for in the data, and how was it being used?
If you have to think back to the mainframe days, right, where you had data being entered into sort of dumb terminal, or data being created in dumb terminals, and then, you know, people doing sort of data entry into sort of headquarters systems, mainframes, and you know, waiting for some period of time to walk over to the printer and get this big pile of green and white striped sheets that were coming off there that had some sort of data on them, and then you had to figure out, you know, whether it was useful, how to use it, right? you really had little to no insight into the business. The main driver was to calculate commissions, you know, for rental stations, for example. And you know, that was a process that would take weeks and weeks and weeks at the end of every month. And then it was never accurate. There's a ton of inefficiencies. And so when we were able to start looking at actual data that represented actual, you know, facts in the business, kind of day of, it changed everything. Made a huge difference just from the perspective of being able to pay commissions to agents working at rental stations, for example, right? And then beyond that, you know, understanding like fleet utilization and understanding, you know, performance and all the types of things that you would love to be able to do, which you couldn't do at the time, became possible. And that was a kind of an overnight change.
Wow. Yeah. So from going to data to sort of the security of data, I mean, open secret. One of my ways to sort of get to know my guests before they come on is I go through their LinkedIn profile and especially their the experiences section, their job history, and it's very helpful in getting sort of a narrative. And especially with yours, with, your positions at a past company, AMD, because reading between the lines, I felt like I saw like a major transition point in your career. And you can tell me if I'm overthinking this or whatever, but in 1998, you were hired by AMD in the role of senior manager, financial planning and analysis, with roles like capital building projects, mergers and finding operating efficiencies by consolidating financial controlling modules into a single service. But, you know, by mid 2000s, you started working in overall strategy of the company, creating sales and marketing roadmaps and overseeing post-merger integration of AMD's then recent acquisition, ATI, which, you know, has more tech, but is largely for other purposes. And then so we cut to 2008, though, and you're now AMD's Director of Information Technology and Strategy. So this feels, based on my limited view and maybe different from what you told me there, like a transformational moment where you moved toward your work now and as a chief information officer. So you noted in, you know, the written section of your experiences that you were promoted into this position by the previous CIO. So can you tell me about this transformational moment? Am I making too much of it here?
No, I think you're actually you're accurate. I mean, so I started my career, like I mentioned to you, somewhat by fluke in technology. Always have been around technology. I've always had kind of a love affair with technology in some way, shape, or form, and the power that you can bring to business outcomes, right? And then. I ended up leaving. I was working in Germany for many years, and I moved back to the States and I went and got a business degree, a graduate degree, because I felt like I wanted more formal business training. And that's how I ended up in the semiconductor industry. And I very specifically wanted to go work in the finance space to understand more about, you know, how the business runs. And I guess I just found myself always working on the technology end of the business and always in this intersection between the business and the technology groups. Right. And so I sort of naturally gravitated towards, you know, helping run these big strategic initiatives, because they always have some kind of technology component to them. When you buy a company, when you carve out a company, when you, you know, do any kind of a transformational change, you know, there's a technology component to it, right? More and more. The point came at which I was very much kind of on the tip of the business spear with respect to kind of driving the priorities for technology investments.
Right. Okay.
And then what caused the change for me was there was a shift really in the strategy around leveraging technology in the company, and a new CIO hired that was given a much broader mandate and much bigger set of goals around driving business value with technology. So like in many companies, there was, you know, a sort of IT as an order taker, you know, cost center type department, you know, doing really sort of basic infrastructure work, and then, you know, maybe running an ERP system sort of, you know,
okay,
scenario. And then, you know, the goal was to, okay, let's get much more ambitious in terms of how we're going to leverage technology in the business. And then so I would plucked out of my role and asked to go, sometimes when they offer you a promotion, it helps, go run strategy on the IT side. So I basically switched back over into the technology world, really still sitting at the intersection between the business and technology, just on the other side of the fence. Right. And yeah. so, you know, and I wandered down this sort of, you know, in between path for quite a while until at some point I had to make a decision in my career. Am I IT guy or a finance and strategy guy? And you know, I've ended up being in IT. You know, the rest of the mm-hmm. story, you know, as well, too. I went on to General Motors to, you know, help drive the transformation of IT there and such. So I've been pretty firmly entrenched now for, you know, a number of years as an IT and a security executive.
Yeah, so I want to sidestep a little bit into that, because as I say, your career path gets a little more linear at that point. You have the CISO role at General Motors and leading to your current role as CIO Global Executive Engagement. Now, for a clarification, a lot of our listeners have told us that they're aspiring eventually to be CISOs, Chief Information Security Officers, mm-hmm. and they may be less familiar with the roles and responsibility of a CIO. And I understand that those are kind of different from position to position. Can you talk about how a Chief Information Officer differs from a Chief Information Security Officer, and whether the two sort of interact, or is it one is you know, used in this company and the other is used if there's other sort of requirements?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I you know, it differs from mm-hmm. company to company and industry to industry. Right. And I think it's also it's constantly evolving. Right. I mean, you know, not too many years ago, really, you know, the CISO role wasn't even a given. And a lot of companies, I remember not having a CISO, no one even mentioning the term CISO, right? We had a security person that worked somewhere in a yes. department somewhere and, you know, and monitored traffic and something like that. And obviously, you know, as information security has become, you know, more and more important over the past, you know, let's say a couple of decades, you know, the role has matured and is still maturing, I would say, you know. And then so you'll see in a lot of enterprises where a CISO reports to a CIO, it's part of the IT function. Other enterprises where, well, no, it's actually not. It's got aspects to it that are not just IT or information security related. There's product security, there's cyber physical security, there's all these different types of, you know, security and things like this. So I think it varies, but, you know, primarily I would break it down this way. If I just sort of focus on information security, right? Mm-hmm. The CISO, you know, your main charge, right, is to protect.
Yes.
Protect the enterprise, protect our IP, protect our mm-hmm. customers, protect, you know, things, right? Yep. And if you think about the role of a CISO and the mandate of, of a CIO, right? Mm-hmm. There are many more perspectives, right? The CIO has to look in different directions, right? So the CIO has a technology estate that they're entrusted with managing and protecting, right? And that's a job in and of itself, right? Keep the lights on, keep the motor running, make sure everything's, you know, up and running when we need it to run, et cetera, right? And do that all with less money than you need, et cetera, right? And if you swivel the chair around, right, and you take the CIO role and you look at the other perspective towards, let's just say, the peers, the functional leadership peers in the enterprise, right, you have a mandate to enable them, right, to enable mm-hmm. them to innovate, enable them to drive business outcomes, et cetera, and you might argue that's actually probably the highest pressure part of the CIO job, right? Right. So you have this tension that exists naturally between like this pressure to drive business outcomes, drive innovation, right, versus, well, hold on, I got to go manage and protect all this stuff as well, too. So, mm-hmm. you know, traditionally, when I spent my stint working in the, you know, in the information security space, you know, I was always trying to figure out ways to change the perception of security from like the boat anchor, you know, or the sand in the gears, right? You're holding us back from innovating, right? And I think the, you know, the world has progressed past that, right? And you know, a lot of times when you talk about security today, you're talking about security as an enabler and things like this, right? And mm-hmm. DevOps and SecDevOps and all these things have evolved to, you know, to kind of make it part of the mainstream. But really, at the end of the day, this tension still does exist, right? Between like having to like have your foot on the brakes and be ready to pump the brakes and make smart decisions versus foot on the gas, drive innovation, drive business outcomes, right? And so the primary difference, I would say, you know, between the roles is that the CIO is kind of being pulled in both directions.
Yeah, beautifully put. And it And it goes nicely towards my next question here, because I wanted to talk about your current role as CIO, Global Executive Engagement for Tanium. And to quote you, you describe your responsibilities like this. In this role, I have the opportunity to leverage my experience as an IT and strategy executive to work with clients, industry experts, and the partner ecosystem on solving some of the most complex problems facing manufacturing and industrial companies. So, you know, a lot of times, like, you know, a phrase like that can feel boilerplate, but that there was something so very specific and interesting about that to me in yours. So I wanted to ask if you could walk me through a bare bones version of the types of complex problems that you're helping manufacturing companies solve with this role.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I made a pretty significant shift in my career from being an executive and a practitioner to, you know, being on the vendor side of the table and in the software space. Right. And so the problems that I experienced working in the manufacturing world had a lot to do with what I call the convergence of technology domains, right? I think there's sort of an underlying theme. Let's just stay with manufacturing, you know, in a manufacturing world, if I use it very broadly, which, you know, let's just say the industrial world, you know, where you've got technology domains that have historically been, you know, very, very independent, that have grown up independently, managed independently, very autonomous. You know, I'm speaking about IT, I'm speaking about industrial controls, or, you know, OT, as we refer to it, right? And then there's also product technology, right? The amount of embedded technology in products, right?
Yes, right.
Automotive is the example, of course, that most people would relate to right away, right? Mm-hmm. These are technology domains that are so historically independent and separate, right? Skill sets that are in engineering, like between IT, software engineering, manufacturing engineering, product engineering, right? Mm-hmm. The technologies, right? The basic differences between, you know, standard operating systems and real-time operating systems, right? Proprietary protocols in let's say industrial environments versus more standard open protocols in IT environments, and you know, who knows in the product space, and then sort of, you know, all of the advent of IoT and sort of, you know, this has created, you know, a real challenge, I think, for manufacturing, that because there are no solutions in the market. This is going to be my opinion here, of course, with which you can sort of manage and protect across all of these domains, right? People are trying to figure out how to do it. And they're trying different things, right? But, you know, the fact is, I always saw this challenge, and I always saw the lack of sort of response or solution in the market for managing across these technology domains, right? And so, you know, when I came to Tanium, and I had knew Tanium before I came to Tanium, I saw technology, a platform that, you know, that has potential to build a foundation for where we're going to be heading, I think, all collectively with respect to managing and protecting across these technology domains. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's sort of the fundamental challenge that I see in manufacturing. Of course, there's tons of other ones.
Yeah, that's interesting. So in the fact that you're working with, you know, vendors and your clients and so forth, you're having to kind of get up to speed with the individual issues in a lot of different industries, I imagine, then, right? So each new sort of case you take on, there's a lot of new contingencies. There's you know, there's a different sort of approach to, as you said, I imagine dealing with, you know, connected cars versus other things that require IoT versus other manufacturing areas. So is that part of the thing that you especially enjoy about this
position? Yeah, I mean, yes, this is one of the things I really love about this role that I'm in, is I do, you know, I mean, number one, I get to interact with, you know, with really smart people at high levels of leadership in really interesting industries and companies. And that in and of itself is fun.
Yeah.
And intellectually, you know, motivating and meaningful. But at the same time, you know, I also get to sort of look across industries, and it's almost like having been a practitioner for so long, but now getting the view across all these different industries, I get to sort of compare and contrast how things are being, you know, how, what the challenges are, then how they're being managed. And you know, it's actually pretty interesting how much similarity there is between the challenges that different industries have. And I'll come back to what I said about this convergence of technology domains, right? Whether you're in the medical field, you know, trying to figure out how to, you know, bring the cost of healthcare down, how to deal with, like, you know, a you know, massive consolidation in the industry, and or whether you're in automotive trying to figure out how to meet regulatory requirements across all these connected vehicles, or whether you're in pharma, or whether you're in, you know, some kind of a, or let's say in energy, right? The challenges, if you bring them down to this sort of point around converged technology domains, are kind of similar. Like how do you get end-to-end visibility and control across these technology domains? There isn't a platform that does it today.
Right. But it also is that actually the sort of goal, is to create the sort of Uber platform to deal with that, or is it just the realization that each case is going to have?
Well, I think that's where we're headed. That's why, you know, when you think about thought leadership for a second, and, like, you know, where's the world headed? Right. I feel like that's where the world's headed. You know, having a platform, you know, that will give you complete visibility and control over all of your IT assets, that in and of itself is great. Not everyone has that, right? People would love to have that, right? Now, if you extend that across other classes of assets, right? I think, you know, the bar has been raised in terms of what people expect and want now, right? It's like, no, I want to see all my IT assets and my industrial assets. And you know what? I want to see all my embedded product assets. I want to see them all in the same place. I want to, because they're interdependent, right? My connected vehicle can't operate with all of the, you know, IT infrastructure that surrounds it, right? Neither can my factory, and so on and so forth, right? So I think, you know, where we're headed as an industry, and again, if you think about regulatory requirements, go look at some of the latest regulatory requirements come out. You know, they require you to be able to build controls across these technology domains. The technology to manage and protect these things is still catching up, right? That's how I look at it.
So that's exactly what I was hoping to hear. Thank you. So I've had a bunch of great recent guests talking about industrial control systems and manufacturing security challenges and infrastructure, and that's focus of our talk today as well, manufacturing security. So to go from the interconnectedness and the sort of, like, asset detection of it all, like, what are some of the big challenges from a security perspective right now? Are there certain commonalities in terms of where the attacks are coming from, where the cracks are in the defense, and what type of consequences we're seeing?
Yeah, I'll share my viewpoint on this. I think, you know, let me just start by saying you're going to find people with different viewpoints here. You know, and there's a lot of people with deep expertise in the industrial control space. You know, and as these two worlds of industrial controls and IT are kind of, you know, converging on one another, you know, there's people with differing opinions and different levels of expertise in there. You know, I would call myself more of a generalist in the middle here. But, you know, what I'll tell you is, you know, the biggest problem is that factories are now connected to the internet. You know, I still have conversations with people that say, well, why do I worry about my, you know, controls within my factory environment? You know, it's completely air gapped, and I don't have any connection anywhere. I'm not really worried about it. It's like, well, that's actually not true in most cases, right? I mean, more and more, you know, your factories are connected to the rest of the world, right? And regardless of how much you invest in sort of retaining your moat and drawbridge approach to protecting them, the pressure is in the other direction, right? And so, so, you know, and if you want evidence of, like, why it matters, all you have to do is just go look at ransomware stories, right? I mean, you know, shut a factory down and you're done, right? That's the end of the road for you for some period of time. And so, you know, it matters. The impact is huge, right? And so you have to address it. And I think there's been sort of a journey of bringing people along to realize, no, I have to address this. And I think some companies, from my observation, are further ahead than others on it. Some companies have been looking at trying to figure out how to bridge this IT and OT for, you know, 10 years now. Others are still in the process of trying to figure out what it means, you know, and then there's all pieces in between, right? And so for sure, if someone has ransomware at your factory, you care about it and you're investing in it, right? You know, if they haven't and you don't really feel like there's much of a threat, maybe you're still investigating, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's at the end of the day, the regulatory requirements are going to bring everyone kind of to the table at the end.
Onto the same page there. I think that sort of that bouquet of issues that you've brought up is kind of what I wanted to talk about, because, you know, like I said, we've had recent guests talk about things like increasingly connected OT devices, like video product inspection or smart warehousing, or the added dangers that come with edge computing practices with regards to collecting data in those places. And those are the sorts of things I think you said, where it's like, well, this isn't air gapped anymore. Like now even the most sort of dumb technology is, you know, pouring data into something central that can be breached. So, you know, one of the things I like to say is that the fun and innovation of cybersecurity is that there's no problem has a single solution, and no, you know, one type of specialty is going to solve all the problems. You know, I've heard related but different solutions to problems in this space, you know, whether it's, like you said, building the moat and drawbridge, or whether it's, you know, working right in with the sort of like the timing of the systems, or sort of seeing like OT systems and sort of more monitoring whether they're making changes, like with the water filtration, and whether there's suddenly, you know, new you know, things coming into it or whatever. But we haven't specifically talked to endpoints, and that was kind of the focus I wanted to have with you here. So when we talk about endpoints, obviously you've said it already a little bit, but we're not just talking about user workstations here. We're talking about all of the assets. So and you said that that's something that's we're having a hard time coming to grips with. But can you give me a better sense of the scope of endpoint issues that you work with?
Yeah, sure. Look, I think first of all, the way I think about manufacturing and security is in terms of these domains, the IT and the OT domain. And if you start with sort of, you know, your classic corporate IT domain, I think everyone pretty much understands how that's structured and how it works, right? And if you go over to the manufacturing side of the house, you know, you have, if you think about operational technology as industrial controls, if I just focus there for a minute, right? You've got industrial control systems that are running in factories that have been around forever, right? OT is in many cases older than IT, right? And very mature processes for managing these, right? But with, you know, you might say nary a concern for security historically, right? And so these systems weren't designed with security in mind. They weren't, you know, built to be, let's say, managed from a protection perspective, right? And so you've got these industrial control systems, right? And they are also proprietary, right? They're different protocols depending on which types of technology you're using in there, right? There's a number of different vendors that build and service and manage these industrial control systems, whether they're in a oil refinery or a factory or a, you know, a logistics environment or whatever. That, you know, these are not IT systems for the most part. They're OT or industrial control systems. They run on different operating systems with different protocols and such, right? And so that, you know, it's hard to imagine, or it's hard to manage across all those. You may have, you know, five or six different major types of technology in your industrial controls environment, and how do you manage across all of them? Each vendor is going to give you access to managing theirs, right? So that's sort of a fundamental challenge. But I think really the more important challenge to recognize in the manufacturing space is that all of those industrial control systems have some sort of a control layer to them, Okay. Right? People talk about Purdue model a lot in manufacturing, where you start looking at sort of the layers of assets and device types and such, right? That begin at the very bottom with level zero, which are your field bus level, you know, actuator sensors, things doing repetitive work, and in the manufacturing environment, all the way up to the very top, which is sort of your control layers and your corporate systems, right? Which could be an MES system, right? A manufacturing execution system, or it could be an ERP system that you're, you know, communicating with. It could be just a basic control system that's managing these industrial controls. At some point, as you go up the stack, you have IT equipment running industrial controls equipment, or governing it, managing it, taking outputs from it and sending it somewhere, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the most important thing to recognize is that you have a bunch of IT in your OT.
Right.
Right. And that IT is, you know, it's endpoints, right? It's endpoints running Windows, Linux, whatever it might be, right? And so, you know, and historically that class of assets has been, I would argue, very much undermanaged.
So that seems to be the consensus of people who I've talked to so far. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, your sort of traditional manufacturing engineering teams that are focused on these industrial controls kind of, you know, acknowledge that they need the IT group to maybe provide them with network access and some email and maybe mm-hmm. some storage to put their stuff in. But really, other than that, they manage their own. Right.
Yes. Sure. Yeah.
And a lot of these types of assets and endpoints that you're seeing in a manufacturing environment are actually vendor managed, right? And so there's a complexity there, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, that is really, in today's world, where I would be putting my focus, right, is on mm-hmm. how do I better, more effectively manage those and protect them, right? And that starts with things like just visibility. What are they?
Right.
And then, you know, basic things like hygiene, patching, you know, you wouldn't be surprised to go into a manufacturing plant somewhere and find a Windows box that hasn't been patched in years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Things that have been set up 20 years ago that couldn't possibly be patched at this point. Yeah.
And at some point, somebody said, I don't ever care about patching this thing. No one's ever going to access it. Right. Well, you know, how
there's some are you clever in that people out there.
Right. Because you've also got security cameras and this and that and all these other things that are running in your factory that are connected to a Windows box somewhere that are sending data in and out of your network. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how confident are you? Right. And so, to me, that really needs to be the focal point, is to look at how effectively am I able to manage and protect that IT portion of my OT environment, right? And that really begins with visibility, but also with collaboration between manufacturing engineering teams and IT teams, which have historically not always worked together.
No, right? For sure.
And so you have to build that collaborative bridge. And you have to have a common understanding of what we're trying to achieve, and the fact that yes, we do need to bring IT methods into your OT environment, and we need to figure out how to do it, because you can't copy paste them in there, right? It's just gonna, it's not gonna work. And so you have to figure out how to do it collaboratively. So that to me is the single most important thing to focus on. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you think about where breaches are happening, and you think about where people are getting in, you know, to sit inside your environment and look for an opportunity to shut your factory down, whatever it might be, it's through those Windows boxes, if you want to put it that way, right? Generally speaking, that they're going to come in.
Well, to that end, I mean, you know, you've sort of laid out a couple of different historical and modern approaches from a security standpoint of what, you know, how to solve the problem of 20-year-old, you know, operating technology systems or things that don't necessarily chain up well with IT. So when you're how does the response, I guess, to manufacturing security issues differ when the focus is on endpoint security? Like if how do the signs of a breach show themselves differently when you're focusing on endpoints? And if something does get through, how does the triaging of the situation differ from the endpoint side of things versus the sort of moat and Jarvis approach?
I'll start by saying this. You know, you cannot, in today's world, you cannot rely on endpoint alone in the manufacturing space, right? This goes back to my very starting comments about there's no end-to-end solutions, right? You can't manage devices in the industrial controls environments like you manage a PC, right? Mm-hmm. You can't put an agent on there and interrogate that endpoint and command that endpoint the same way. That's happening through protocols, you know, that are built and managed, and they're very proprietary, you know, that are that are created by the vendors of those devices, right? They're the makers of those devices. And so you have a challenge, right? And the way that that's being addressed today in the market is people are, you know, they're listening to network traffic, right? So they're identifying you know, information about devices in this environment by tapping into network traffic and listening to what these devices are saying to each other and how they're identifying themselves and stuff like this, right? So it's a non-invasive approach we call passive scanning, right, in some environments. And so that's what's available in the market today. You know, my case would be you have to have that plus, you know, the endpoint approach where you can actually get a hold of and manage and control and protect the endpoint, right? Because obviously, if you're listening to traffic on a network, you can't do anything. You can only listen, right? And so my first, I guess, guidance is, you know, you have to look at both of these in concert. So if you're thinking about like a manufacturing SOC or something like this, or you want to have sort of end-to-end workflows, or you want to have, you know, your SIM, you know, end-to-end, you really need to be looking at like, what are the different data sources I need to pull into there? Right. So it's almost like an aggregation of data you're going to get from your endpoints versus what you can pull off the, you know, off the network traffic, your port spans or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And so where we're headed, I think, in manufacturing is going to be more of a heterogeneous management of the assets. We're headed into a place, I think, where you're going to find platforms that are going to be able to see everything, right? And it's not easy because you're dealing with completely different technologies, right? Mm-hmm. But someone's going to figure out, and I know that people are working on figuring it out, you know, how to make these different types of protocols communicate with each other and how to get, like, let's call it, you know, uniform view over all of these assets. Mm-hmm. And then I think there'll be a new class of solutions that are going to emerge, you know, either from the one side, you know, the folks that are doing OT security solutions today with passive scanning, and from the other side, the IT guys that have got the endpoints and such, right? Somewhere in the middle, there'll be a solution that evolves. That's kind of my viewpoint on it.
I think you're right. I think that seems quite logical. So I want to move to from the tech that's coming in the future to the workers that are coming in the future. As I mentioned always at the top of the show, a goal of CyberWorks is to help students and new cybersecurity professionals sharpen the skills needed to enter the cybersecurity industry, or maybe people later in life changing careers, say engineers or people in, you know, the sort of more mechanical side of manufacturing. So for those who are wishing to make their mark doing this type of manufacturing security work, Tom, do you have any advice about the most important sort of technical skills or experiences or training paths or certifications or just even just interpersonal and creative skills that they need to sort of get up to speed very quickly in sort of manufacturing spaces like this?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tricky one, right? Because you talk to a guy my age and like things are evolving so fast in technology. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
It's very hard to keep up, right? I think just fundamentally to recognize the difference between sort of manufacturing engineering or industrial engineering and information technology or computer science, right?
Right.
You know, and find opportunities to kind of be part of building the bridge between these. That's where the future is. You know, the same applies for embedded product technology, right? If you just stay with the automotive, you know, world that I'm quite familiar with, right? If you think about vehicle architectures and what they call software-defined vehicle architecture, right? I mean, you know, more and more, you know, it's software, it's computer science, right?
Yeah, right.
And as opposed to, you know, product engineering, right, in a vehicle. And so to me, you know, finding opportunities to be on that intersection, you know, where these things are overlapping is probably the most exciting place to be. And it's probably also the place where if you can develop skills there, you know, the most opportunities will be.
Well, on the other side of that coin, are there particular skills gaps that you're seeing among people who are trying to get into these types of positions and careers? Are there certain things that you consistently see lacking in job candidates that you might be looking at to hire in this space that you'd like to see more emphasized in the future?
I'll be maybe a bit more general here, but one of the things that I've seen consistently throughout my career is, you know, when you have, like, people tend to love people with technical skills,
right?
Mm-hmm. People get grouped in like organizational planning between technical and non-technical roles. And it's like, you know, you want a technical person, but to be in a technical role, right, and to be an engineer of some sort, right, and to become effective in a business, if you think about at the end of the day why we're all here in business, which is mm-hmm. to really make a profit, right, you need to develop some business acumen, right? Okay. And so, mm-hmm. so how do you develop business acumen in a technical career path, right? That's mm-hmm. sort of the thing that I see some people doing effectively, but others not, right? And or maybe it holds people back a little bit, right? And then if you flip it around and look at it conversely, you know, or inversely, you know, people that are in, let's say, non-technical roles, governance roles, right? If in the security space, right, you've got all sorts of different GRC related roles that are critical, they're important there, right? But to develop a little bit of technical acumen, in terms of understanding what you're governing.
Yeah.
And sure. Some of the challenges there from a technology perspective, I think, is, you know, sort of in the same fashion, you know, important and useful to being more effective and more, you know, more useful to the outcomes of the company.
I think in general, good advice is don't just learn how to do your job, but why the job is being done. Because once you learn why, you're in a better spot to say, well, why are we doing it just like this?
I would agree with you.
Because that's when you can sort of make the big changes, is when you see the why, then you can say, well, what if we tried this and what if we tried this and so forth. So, for listeners who are starting their career, maybe they're still students or whatever, but they would want to move towards this type of work in manufacturing security as their emphasis. Where should they be looking to get experience or network or get themselves on the map? Do you have any thoughts on that sort of like that first step?
Yeah, look, I think the world of industrial controls is, you know, something of a mystery to a lot of people.
Mm.
You know, most of us who have kind of grown up in business,
mm-hmm.
some sort of IT or technical background, you know, have been exposed to IT in some way, shape or form. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The world of industrial controls has been, you know, kind of somewhere over here, managed by some people over there for many, many years. Right. So to find opportunities to educate yourself on how industrial controls work.
Yes.
Right. Because that's what everyone cares about right now. Right. The bad guys are coming after it. They're going to shut off water supplies and electricity and grids. Mm-hmm. You know, it, and to really get an understanding of how those industrial control systems work. Right. And Google it and get free classes on it and stuff like this. Right. Yeah, I think it's really an important kind of foundation to getting into this space, because, for sure, you cannot take IT methods and just copy paste them over into the industrial controls world, right? You have to understand that world.
Yeah, completely. All right. So, Tom, as we wrap up today, I like to ask this of all our guests here. What's the best piece of career advice you ever received, whether from a mentor or a teacher or a colleague or just on the job?
I think I'll give you two things.
Okay.
The first is advice that I have sort of given myself over time, or thing, you know, what I've come to realize over time is not to underestimate people. Right. We hear a lot about the importance of diversity and the importance of building teams with different perspectives and backgrounds and all this stuff. Right. And so, you know, if you're moving on with your career and you're kind of a hard charger and trying to get somewhere in life, right, you're going to come up against people inevitably in any scenario where you're at that aren't in your wheelhouse or aren't in your same page or wavelength, whatever it is, right? And I think one of the things that I've learned over time is not to be so much in a rush that you're dismissive of people that don't really fit with what you're trying to do. You know, there's a lot of like pause and think about how somebody can be useful before you brush past them, you know, and is it really to get to the, you know, where you want to go, you're not going to get there alone for the most part. And so that, you know, that's sort of a career advice thing. In terms of sort of advice I've received, it's not so much sort of career advice, but more sort of tactical advice for how to be successful. This is something I receive, you know, sort of words of wisdom that I remember from earlier on in my career with a boss. He told me, so, you know, one good skill set to have is to constantly be anticipating, right? And his words were, you know, I'm always thinking, what's next? What's coming next? What's happening next? Right. So as you you wake up and you start your day, or as you're coming off a meeting or you're going from lunch, whatever it might be in your everyday work, it's like, what's coming next? And anticipating being prepared for it, right, yeah, is going to make you, first of all, much more effective at what you're doing. Just being mentally prepared for something before you do it. And then secondly, you know, it's going to help you prioritize what you're doing, because, you know, the thing that you were thinking about doing next might actually not be the thing you should do next.
Right.
If you step back and think about what's coming next. Right. And that may be a bit, you know, mushy and philosophical, but to be honest, it's something that served me well throughout my career, you know, and I'm doing it constantly.
Yeah. That seems to be you're literally at the sort of like the peak of the mountain of what's next or whatever. So I imagine that's something you've really needed to sort of focus on. So Tom, as we wrap up today, we've talked a little bit about Tanium, but tell us more about Tanium and the work you do to protect manufacturing, industrial control, and critical infrastructure through endpoint protection.
Yeah, I mean, Tanium is a platform. You know, it's modern technology to help companies streamline their technology stacks, right? I mean, it starts with visibility and control over your endpoints at scale, right, with high fidelity. And then, you know, from there, it's how do you streamline the management and protection of your estate, and how do you get rid of complexity, right? I think that, you know, the one thing in technology that stands in the way of most organizations' goals, you know, growth, profits, compliance, is complexity, right? Complexity is the roadblock to all of this in technology. And Tanium is a platform that helps you remove that complexity and streamline the way you manage and protect your estate, right? So everything from, you know, fundamental asset management all the way up through, you know, the more complex parts of of protecting your estate, right? From you know, security and compliance.
Nice. Okay.
That's how I would summarize Tanium.
Yeah. Love it. So, yeah, one last question, and then we can say goodbye here. If our listeners want to learn more about you, Tom Olden, or learn more about Tanium, where should they look online?
Well, obviously, you know, Tanium.com would be a good place to go. I think we have a pretty informative and useful website. I myself don't have too much of an online presence, but certainly, you know, I am in LinkedIn and I use LinkedIn. And so if anybody wants to reach out and chat to me, I'm happy to connect. And I rarely turn down an interesting conversation. So.
Fabulous. Well, I know our listeners are good at providing those. So I hope you all will connect up real soon. But in the meantime, Tom, thanks so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed your take on this fascinating security challenge.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was a pleasure to be here.
And thank you, as always, to everyone who watches, listens, and writes to CyberWork with their feedback. If you have any topics you'd like us to cover or guests that you'd like to see on the show, drop them in the comments below. We will do our best to get them. So before we go, I always want to ask that you don't forget InfoSecInstitute.com/free, where you can get a whole bunch of free and exclusive stuff for CyberWork listeners. That includes our new security awareness scripted training series, Work Bites, is hilarious. It's a set of videos in which a very strange office staffed by a pirate, a zombie, an alien, a fairy princess, a vampire, and others navigate their way through the age-old struggles of yore, whether it's not clicking on the treasure map someone just emailed you, making sure your nocturnal vampiric accounting work at the hotel is VPN secured, and realizing that even if you have a face as recognizable as the office's terrifying IT guy, Boneslicer, you still can't buzz you in without your key card. So go to the site, check out the trailer. I love it. InfoSecInstitute.com/free is still the place to go for your free cybersecurity talent development ebook. These are really useful. We've had a lot of good feedback on it. You can find in-depth training plans for the 12 most common security roles, including SOC analyst, pen tester, cloud security engineer, information risk analyst, privacy manager, secure coder, ICS professional, and more. Once again, InfoSecInstitute.com/free. And as always, the link is in the description below. One last time, thank you to Tom Molden and Tanium. And thank you for watching and listening. And until next time, this is Chris Senko signing off saying happy learning. How about some free cybersecurity training resources for you and your team? Just go to infosecinstitute.com/free to get ebooks, training guides, and more than 100 cybersecurity training courses, all free for CyberWork listeners. Go to infosecinstitute.com/free and start learning crucial new skills today.